Belinda presents this unabridged recording of The Tea Gardens, written by Fiona McIntosh and read by Katie Sobey. Chapter 1. It was nearing Christmas, and I was taking a stroll with my father through the sprawling Royal Park of Kensington Gardens to the northeast. The southern side near our house was home to museums and royal buildings, including the Royal Albert Hall and the Royal College of Music. We lived in South Kensington, which was both fashionably envied by the social climbers and yet perhaps not as highly aware of itself as Belgravia and Knightsbridge. I grew up in a small enclave called Kensington Gate. It was built originally by an importer of tobacco and meerschaum pipes and became a favourite corner for men who roasted chestnuts on open braziers. The developer had arranged two terraced groups of homes in the Italianate style that is not overtly showy but leanly elegant with stucco fronts. It was only the entrance porticos, supported on Ionic columns, that added the lustre of grandeur. The terraces overlooked a central closed garden, which was a private park for our neighbourhood. The end houses, of which ours was one, possessed an additional story, and my suite of rooms was on that highest level looking out through arched windows. It was the only home I'd known, but it was graceful to my eye, and growing up I used to love stepping out on the small balcony that was attached to my mother's rooms. After her death, my father suggested I move into her salon, but not once did that feel comfortable, which I suspect pleased him, so the doors remain closed, locking in her perfume and scented talcs, her fragranced soaps and potpourri. I probably believed we could maintain her memory with clarity by keeping her rooms as she had left them. This notion is still a comfort to two people who miss her brightness, which was like a sunrise to our quieter, sunset-like personalities. On this particular winter's day, we were walking towards Kensington Palace, muffled up against early November's chill. The climate had been surprisingly dull and dry since autumn began gilding the landscape in her golden colours, and my father's mood had caught a similar disposition. He had been muttering about the pound being devalued, but he had fallen quiet while my mind was busy with the news of the social visionary, Gandhi, who was on a visit to Britain and being received by our king. I thought we were walking in an easy silence, and so it came as a shock when my father suddenly said,
"Isla, we must discuss a suitable marriage."
I'm sure my expression bore the same bewildered look as someone staring with disbelief at the arrow shaft poking out of their chest. It was a topic we had left well alone for years.
"You're nearing 30 now, my dear."
He said this in a tone as if I needed reminding. "And I have duly marked each birthday, Papa," I replied, frowning. He gave me a soft glare of admonishment, and I knew he meant to have the conversation whether I cared to or not.
"I made a promise to your mother."
"You surely made many," I said, resuming our walk. It was easier to cope with this conversation if we didn't have to face one another.
"I did, mostly about you, and none more important than the two I made as she slipped away from us."
He paused, forcing me to do the same, and to watch as he seemed to search for the right words.